Welcome to Six Questions from Six. This conversation is with Danny Schneider about the SHIFT Project's research on American employees' work schedules in the retail and food sectors and the impact of those unpredictable schedules on their lives.
Question one, can you please tell us a little bit about yourself and about the SHIFT Project and how the most recent survey was conducted?
I'm Danny Schneider. I'm an assistant professor of sociology at the University of California at Berkeley. And I'm co-director of the SHIFT Project, along with my colleague, Kristen Harknett, who's associate professor at the University of California, San Francisco. We founded the SHIFT Project back in 2015, and it's hosted at the Institute for Research on Labor and Employment at UC Berkeley. The SHIFT Project is really designed to bring to light, through new data, new surveys, and new projects, how unstable and unpredictable work schedules shape the lives and the well-being of workers and their families in the United States. We began the SHIFT Project really because what we realized is that for many practices that count for working families, having on-call shifts or short advance notice, working the dreaded clopening shift, or having a variable number of hours from week to week, we really lacked the kind of large-scale social science data that can be so important for understanding the scope and consequences of a policy problem. And so when we began SHIFT, we wanted to fill that hole. We wanted to collect the kind of data that had been missing, and we wanted to collect it from the workers who are really the focus of policymaking attention in this area, workers at large-scale retail and food service companies, at chains, at companies like Walmart and Starbucks, at McDonald's and Panera, in grocery, in pharmacy, in casual dining, in electronics, across all these sectors that we hear a lot about in the news today because there are a large share of jobs for working Americans. So the way we collect this data is by going to employees of these large firms, about 140 of the largest retail and food service firms in the country, and asking them to complete online surveys. And what's novel about these surveys is for the first time, they're really collecting a really comprehensive set of measures of work schedules. And we've collected data from tens of thousands of workers across these companies, basically going out and surveying folks a couple times every year for the last almost 4 years now.
Question number two is, what are the top line takeaways of this survey?
I think we have learned in some ways just how prevalent unstable and unpredictable work schedules are for workers in the retail and food service sectors. And so what we see is that, unstability and unpredictability is the rule. In some ways, it is entirely predictable that your schedule will be unstable and unpredictable, but it is also entirely unknown exactly what that will look like. So what we see is that fewer than a third of workers are getting at least 2 weeks advance notice of what their work schedule will be for the days ahead. We see that about a quarter of workers are asked to work at least once on call in the last month. More than 1 in 10 workers report a canceled shift in the last month where they were they were scheduled to work, but then their shift was canceled. And this cancellation happens for the vast majority of those workers at the last moment with less than a day's notice. We also see a set of other practices that are really common for these workers. We see that almost half of workers report a clopening shift where they close the store often late at night and then with fewer than 10 hours in between shifts come back often after a long trip on public transit and a few hours sleep, to clock in again and reopen the store. We see a great deal of variability in people's work hours. So what we, I think a really important thing to keep in mind here is that for retail and food service workers in our data, overwork is not the problem. The problem that these folks face is a problem of insufficient hours, of not getting enough hours at their main job. We see that a third of workers in our data report that they are working fewer than 35 hours a week at their main job and would like more hours. They are also, when the hours they get are volatile, they go up from week to week. So you might have 20 hours one week and 30 hours the next week. The other third key point here is that all of this is happening without worker control. So this is not the desirable flexibility that many professionals or white-collar workers or professors have in their schedules. Instead, this is instability. And workers tell us, how do we know? Is workers tell us first that they have very little control over what their work hours will be. They also tell us that they're required to keep their schedules open and available for work. And third, we just ask them, would you like a more stable and predictable schedule? And 75% of workers say that they would like a more stable and predictable work schedule.
Question number three. How are marginalized communities at higher risk from these types of scheduling practices?
This is a great question. We can think about this in a couple of ways. The first is, what is the population of workers who are exposed to retail and food service jobs? Are workers of color, are female workers overrepresented in these occupations? And we see that that is part of the story here, that there is an overrepresentation in retail and food service work for marginalized workers compared to other sectors of the economy. But then with our data, we can look within that sector, within the large firms in retail and food service, and ask, are there inequalities? Are there disparities between white workers and workers of color within this set of jobs? And there in our research, we show that there are significant gaps in job quality as measured by work scheduling practices between workers of color and their white counterparts. So this is some of the first research to really show that these gaps occur not just in wages, which we well know, or fringe benefits, or at the time of hiring, but that once on the job, it's also the case that workers of color have more unstable and unpredictable work schedules. And we see that that gap, when we look across a set of indicators of scheduling, is that workers of color have about 15% higher likelihoods of being exposed to worse scheduling practices than their white counterparts. And then we ask, what's driving these gaps? And we can sort of take account of a set of background characteristics, things like age and marital status and having kids, things like education and time on the job. I think it's really important to think hard about what we're doing when we adjust for those factors. These are downstream factors that themselves are likely the product of discriminatory practices earlier in the life course, and it was long-term, deep-seated historical injustices. But when we control for them, we're not saying that's not discrimination. We're trying to home in on what's happening specifically on the job. So we can control for those factors, and we see that they explain a part of the gap, but that a gap still remains. So then we can ask, well, how much of that gap is about what's happening on the job, and how much of it is about the job you have? That is, we can make comparisons, for instance, among workers at the same firm, as opposed to workers at different firms all within the same sector. This is like asking, are the gaps between workers of color and white workers primarily because workers of color are working at firms where everyone has bad schedules? Or is it because at any job, part of the story here is that workers of color are always getting worse schedules? And we see that firm matters, particularly for African-American workers. That for African-American workers, part of the story here, and this really fits with a lot of research we have on hiring discrimination, being particularly bad for African-American workers, is that they seem to be discriminated against at the point of hire, such that they end up at firms with some of the worst job quality. But that's still not the whole story. We still see gaps between white and non-white workers, between white and Black workers, white and Latinx workers, at the same firms, doing the same occupations with the same background characteristics. What's going on there? This is the closest approximation we have to on-the-job discrimination. And one thing that sort of builds that case is we then look to see, are these gaps explained by instances where workers of color have white managers, have direct managers who are not of the same race as themselves? And so I think an important thing to note here is that what we find is that for all workers, having a manager who is not of your same race ethnicity actually is a disadvantage when it comes to scheduling. But the reality of work in America is that most workers of color have a manager who's not of their same race ethnicity, whereas most white workers have a white manager. And this then together explains an additional part of the disparities that workers of color and white workers have in terms of their scheduling practices on the job.
Question number four. Based on your research, what impacts would you expect Fair Workweek laws to have on working people's well-being?
When we began this project, we wanted to understand not just the scope of exposure to unstable and unpredictable work practices, but the consequences of those practices for sort of bottom line, fundamental outcomes, fundamental aspects of workers' health and well-being. We wanted to ask, how does having an on-call shift or a canceled shift or volatile hours or short notice matter for the quality of workers' lives? How does it matter for their household economic insecurity? How does it matter for work-life conflict? How does it matter for how you sleep at night, for how happy you are, for feeling depressed? And I think that comes out of the sense from talking to many workers and hearing testimonies that having an unstable and unpredictable work schedule is fundamentally disruptive to living a good life, that it's hard to plan when you don't know when you're going to work, that it's stressful when you don't know when you're going to work, that it's upsetting to family finances when the number of hours you get from week to week varies. And so the survey, in addition to measuring all these aspects of unstable and unpredictable scheduling, also measure things like experiences of material hardship. We ask workers, has there been a time when you were hungry because you couldn't afford enough to eat? Is there a time when you used a food pantry or food bank because you couldn't afford to buy food? Is there a time when you had to double up with somebody because you couldn't afford the rent? We ask a number of these material hardship questions, and we see that unstable and unpredictable schedules are a real risk factor for experiencing these fundamental measures of deprivation. And what's, I think, really important to note is that is after we account for wages and after we account for household income, that the unsettling of time makes it really hard to plan a life in a way that makes you able to make ends meet. That's because your income goes up and down, it's hard to meet bills, but it's also because we think it's cognitively taxing to have a really unstable schedule. It makes it hard to plan ahead and save. We think it depletes your social networks because you're constantly asking folks to help you with childcare, with transportation. All these factors contribute to more hardship. Unstable and unpredictable schedules also lead to worse mental health. We see that workers who have more instability in their schedules report that they sleep less well at night. And we see that these same workers report being more depressed. All of these things together really tell a portrait of how money matters for well-being. We know that, but time also matters a great deal for workers' health and well-being. The organization of our work time and when work is unstable and unpredictable really has consequences for how workers fare.
Question number five, does this affect other people besides the workers? Does this affect their children? What impact does this have on people that are not just the workers themselves?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we have this American ideal, maybe a myth, that, you know, every child has an equal opportunity to get ahead in life, and that starting points should not determine our endpoints in terms of our life course. And when we began this work, we wanted to look and see, you know, and measure the reality that it's not just adults working these jobs who may be affected, but that there may be intergenerational consequences, that when children's parents work unstable and unpredictable schedules, those kids may be negatively affected. That is to say that the outcomes for parents really may put a brake on the ability of kids to get ahead in the next generation, that unstable schedules may not just be bad for parents, but they may be bad for intergenerational mobility, for the ability of every child to have that equal start in life. So we have measured a whole set of outcomes around child health and well-being in the data that we ask parents to report for us when they have young children in the home. And, you know, I think what we see here is just, you know, how sort of widespread, you know, how far the consequences of unstable schedules spread within families. So one place where, you know, perhaps not surprising to see this is when it comes to childcare. So, you know, as a working professional with two kids, I find it very hard to arrange childcare. But I've got a stable and flexible schedule, and I make enough money to afford childcare. What we see for the folks in our sample is when schedules are unstable and unpredictable, in the context of low wages, that makes arranging for childcare extremely difficult. And the consequence is that having formal childcare, center-based childcare, which research in child development suggests can be very beneficial for children's well-being and achievement, is almost impossible to obtain because when parents need that childcare is very unpredictable. Instead, we see that parents rely on informal caregivers. And this can be a fine arrangement that can be beneficial for child well-being, but what we see is that these arrangements are often multiple, that is, kids have many different caregivers over the course of a week, and that kind of multiplicity, that kind of lack of routine can be very negative for children's development. And we also see that, you know, parents are forced to make hard choices, that when it comes to missing your shift and potentially losing your job, or having a suboptimal childcare arrangement, parents must make a really difficult trade-off. And we see that folks with more unstable and unpredictable schedules report, for instance, leaving an older sibling who's not that old themselves in charge of a younger sibling in order to make it to work. I think what this research on childcare shows is that it's not just older siblings who bear this burden of childcare, right? This is time that they might be doing homework or engaging in other activities that are beneficial. It's grandparents as well who are asked to take on this burden. And it's kin and kith in the community who take on this burden. All of this is a kind of subsidy. It's a subsidy of informal and unpaid care work, not to the workers, I would argue, but to the companies that essentially invisibly rely on this network of unpaid caregivers in order to use that allows them to use the kind of unstable and unpredictable scheduling practices that make other care arrangements impossible.
Question number six, what can state legislators do with this new research, or how can they best connect with this research or get additional information?
Great. Yeah, all the data we've been talking about today is national data. It's drawing on this database of tens of thousands of workers to describe the extent of unstable and unpredictable schedules and its consequences for workers' health and well-being and for their children. But one of the unique strengths of the SHIFT project that we're really excited about is because we've built such a big database, we have the capacity to not just paint a broad national picture, but to look within particular places and to understand what scheduling looks like in individual cities and individual states around the country. And so we have rolled out a research brief series, which you can check out on our website, where we've begun to profile states around the country and describe these same sets of practices and outcomes in those particular places. And that's work we're eager to continue doing. And it's work that we really only want to undertake when it can be informative to policymakers. And so we're eager to hear from folks who might be interested in seeing that kind of data for the states that they represent or the cities that they represent. We think that there is a valuable role for research evidence like this, for the numbers, for these statistical associations as part of the policymaking process. Workers' experiences and stories are a really important input to understanding the scope of this problem and the solutions. But when we can put that together with statistical data, we think that can make for the most informed approach to this important issue.
Thank you so much, Danny. If you'd like more information, visit shift.berkeley.edu. As always, please reach out to helpdesk@stateinnovation.org for support on this and any other issue. This has been Six Questions from Six. Until next time.